Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Necessary Roughness Podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports, as always. I am your host, Nicholas Donatic, and I hope you're all having a wonderful weekend, and thank you for spending a part of it with us. Now, we're coming off a pretty good Episode 8. All the episodes are good. Episode 8 was especially good because we turned it around from an awful pick'em the week before. And we had a good one this week, and I'd love to jump straight into the picks, but we got to open up with this week's edition of Nick's Standout 7. Number one, and it's been simmering for a while, and I've talked about one of them before, the Jacksonville Jaguars' stable of running backs. Now, when they drafted Leonard Fournette, who had the potential to be a transcendent talent, when he was in college, he was compared to Adrian Peterson for a while. You know, I wasn't too weary on it, but looking at their backfield, I thought they had other areas they could have addressed. Sometimes you just draft the best player on the board. I think that's what they were doing. And it hasn't gone wrong. So far this season, in 7 games, he has 600 yards and 2 touchdowns, averaging 4.5 yards a carry. But right behind him, you have Chris Ivory, who spells him every once in a while, second in carries on the team. Half the carries, under half, just under. About 200 yards, and then you have T.J. Yeldon, who has 9 carries on the season. T.J. Yeldon has the potential to be a pretty good NFL running back. I think he's a solid back, and the fact that he's been relegated to the third back on the team is quite interesting. You look back at his rookie year, he averaged over 4 yards a carry, just over. He had 700 yards. Last year, he was utilized even less because Chris Ivory was the main horse. This team has a stable of running backs like I haven't seen in a while. If they can get a solid balance, this could be a scary Jaguar run game. Their offensive line is pretty good, and with Blake Bortles at the helm, their passing game is inconsistent, but it has shown flashes. You might say, Nick, that's your favorite phrase. Well, sometimes I like to be an optimist. Blake Bortles can make the throws, but he can also, you know, go full Eli Manning and just toss the ball to the opposing team a few times. Nonetheless, Bortles has been decent this season. He hasn't cost them too much. And as of right now, they're sitting tied for first place in a competitive AFC South. An AFC South which has, to be honest, not been a very good division in past years. The Texans had a good defense with no quarterback. The Titans were awful till they got Mariota, and then Mariota got hurt last year. The Colts were a decent team, and then Luck has been struggling with shoulder injuries, among others. And, you know, these Jaguars themselves have dealt with Blake Bortles and an inconsistent offense. But with Doug Marrone running the show, and Tom Coughlin calling the shots in the front office, they've put together a decent start to the season, and they could wind up contending for this division. As I said, they're tied for the lead with the Tennessee Titans, and they are a half game up on the Texans, who've already had their bye. And the Colts are down at 2-5. The Colts, while only 2 games out, are probably the worst team in this division. You could argue they're still in it, as we're only halfway through the season. 2 games, there's plenty of time to make it up. But I would say the Colts are likely not going to win this division, unless they get on a crazy hot streak once Andrew Luck comes back, if/when he does come back. Additionally, Leonard Fournette is making me a little weary about my pick of Deshaun Watson for Offensive Rookie of the Year. Fournette has looked very good. Watson has looked good as well. But Fournette has busted off some big, big plays. And if the Jags are somehow able to wrestle this division away and make the postseason, which would be an overwhelming success, he just might sway me. And if he can sway me, I would say he could definitely sway the voters, and you have a legitimate chance to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. Number 2 of my standout 7 is a bit different than the others. It is just a deep dive into some of these surprise playoff contenders. We mentioned the Jags, so let's start there. We broke down their division, but let's take a look at their schedule for the rest of the season. The Jaguars have a bye this week, coming off a beatdown of the Indianapolis Colts. Then they're going to take on the Bengals and the Chargers at home before heading out to Cleveland and Arizona. Then a three-piece at home, their second game against the Colts, a game against the Seattle Seahawks, then their final game against the Houston Texans before heading to the road to take on the San Francisco 49ers and the Titans. All right, so as of right now, as I've said, they're sitting at 4-3 with losses to Tennessee, Los Angeles, the Rams, that is, and we'll get to the Rams in a minute, and the New York Jets in overtime. Rough loss. New York Jets, goodness gracious. And one of the telling things is, through seven games, Blake Bortles has surpassed 300 yards just once. There were three games in which he didn't pass 200 yards, one of which was under 100. He had 95 passing yards in their victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers. Furthermore, their leading rusher when they took down the Baltimore Ravens was Corey Grant. 75 yards in that game. He only has just over 100 on the season. The loss to Tennessee, Fournette was bottled up as a whole, and they got blown out. Lost to the Jets, 23-20. They were close the whole way. So looking ahead, could this team beat Cincinnati at home? Yes. I think they're fairly evenly matched, and I would argue Cincinnati might be a little bit better, but coming off a bye week and coming off that big win over their division rival, the Colts, I think Jacksonville has a pretty good shot to win that game. The same goes for the next week against the Chargers, and then against Cleveland, and then against Arizona, a team without a starting quarterback. As we'll talk about later in the Standout 7, Carson Palmer's on IR. So while the Cardinals might have offensive talent and a very talented defense, they're a chicken without a head if they don't have their starting quarterback. And then here's where things get interesting. There's a three-game stretch. It's really a five-game stretch, but it's split by a game with San Francisco. They take on the Colts in Jacksonville, and this is week 13. And what this is really going to hinge on, in my opinion, is if Andrew Luck has come back at that point. There have been reports that he was supposed to come back a few weeks ago, and then he had a setback. There were reports that they may let him stay out the whole year. If he's back for that game, it'll be an interesting game. If he's not, Jacksonville should be able to win it. Then they take on Seattle at home, and Seattle has not been dominant this season. Just recently, in their victory over the New York Giants, they looked very, very vulnerable. Now, at that point, they could be on a hot streak, and they could be the giant that they were a few years ago. I don't think so. I don't think their team is good enough to be that. I think Jacksonville can test them. But inevitably, a game like that is likely a toss-up. Then, in week 15, they take on the Houston Texans for the second time. First time they faced Houston was in week 1. Deshaun Watson was not the starter at that point. I think Houston comes in looking for revenge and they win that game. Then the Jags go into San Francisco, and I'll say this, this is a classic trap game. In between games against Seattle, Houston, and Tennessee, you have a game against the lowly 49ers, who will have packed it in at that point. They will be playing for next year, and they should be able to go out and win. Then again, they should have been able to go out and win against the New York Jets. They could lose that game. Then they end the year in Tennessee at Mr. Mariota's field, the team that they're currently tied with, and that game very well could determine the division. Their Week 15 matchup with Houston and their Week 17 matchup could determine how good of a year this is. If I had to put money on it, would I pick them to make the playoffs? Probably not. That's considering that they have the worst quarterback in their division, if the Colts have Andrew Luck. If the Colts are running with Jacoby Brissett, I'll take Bortles, based on sheer experience, but not by much. I like Bortles, but I can't overrate him here. He's no Marcus Mariota, and I don't even think he's Deshaun Watson. Even a rookie Deshaun Watson should likely be able to outperform him. If this team's going to make it, they're going to have to do it with this stable of running backs and with some solid defense, something they've showed that they can do over the first half of the season. But will they be able to keep it up? Our next surprise playoff contender is the Buffalo Bills, who enter this week's slate of games with a 4-2 record. How shocking is that? They're second in the division by a half game, and they come in having notched victories over the Atlanta Falcons, the Denver Broncos, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, this week they're going to have to take on the Oakland Raiders, but the Oakland Raiders have been hot and cold this season. If we look at their remaining schedule, they have the Raiders, the Jets a second time, which could be tough. The Jets did test them their first time a little bit. It was 21-12, but it was week 1 and the team was still getting together. The Jets have been surprisingly competitive this season. I think that will be a close game. Then they have the Saints, and the Saints have shown that they're back a little bit. They can put up some points. Now, the Bills' defense is solid. If we take a look at scoring defense this season, the Buffalo Bills rank fourth in the NFL at 16.8 points per game. They're only topped by the Seahawks, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the aforementioned Jacksonville Jaguars. The Bills' offense, on the other hand, has not been so impressive, ranking 20th in the league at just under 20 points a game. And we've talked before about Tyrod Taylor and his talent, and the talent on this offense, but the fact of the matter is their receiving core is not great. So will the Bills be able to contend? Well, let's finish off looking at that schedule. We already said Raiders, Jets, Saints, then they have the Los Angeles Chargers, the Chiefs at Arrowhead, a game with the Patriots, the Colts, Dolphins, the Patriots at Foxborough, and the Dolphins. Again, so two Dolphins games, two Patriots games in the last five games of the year. Now, I won't pick this Raiders game, but I think it's going to be tough with Derek Carr back because that team is treading water. And if the Raiders need to declare themselves. If they want to contend like everyone thought they would, they got to win that game. The Jets will test them. The Saints will test them. The Chargers have been competitive, but I think the Bills should be able to win that one. I don't know if they're good enough to stick with the Chiefs. I don't know if I can pick against the Patriots. Tom Brady has been phenomenal in his career against the Bills. Obviously, track record against a specific team means less and less every year because the players on that team are no longer the same. Being good against a certain uniform may help you mentally, but tangibly, I don't think it helps very much. Anyway, then they have the Colts, Dolphins twice, and that final game against the Patriots. It's going to be a rough AFC wildcard push. I don't know if the Bills are going to be able to make it. I think I have more faith in the Jaguars contending since they can try and push for their division. I don't know if the Bills can actually push to contend in their division considering they're in a division with the New England Patriots. And they have yet to play the Patriots. If they can beat New England once or twice, it could be close. I think New England's going to wind up winning both of those games, spoiler alert, and I think the Patriots win this division, and I think the Bills wind up just missing the playoffs. Now, our final surprise playoff contender, and there are plenty, but these are the three that I picked out. If you have any comments on teams I didn't select, or maybe you don't like that I picked a certain team, be sure to hit me up on Twitter, at Nick Donatic. Any feedback is welcome. We'll have a little exchange, and, you know, maybe one of us will learn something. The final team I'm looking at as a surprise playoff contender already has a half-game lead in their division, and it is the Los Angeles Rams, who enter this week as the highest-scoring offense in the NFL. They're averaging over 30 points per game. They are the only team to be averaging over 30 points per game, which is shocking. They are second in the league at third-down conversions. And they are ninth in the league in yards per game, offensively, that is. Now, if you want to take a look at their defense, on the other hand, is top 10 in points per game allowed, but they're middle of the pack in yards per game allowed. So this team has shocked the world, in my opinion. I don't think anyone saw this Rams team coming, and all the credit goes to Sean McVay, the head coach. I've said this many times, and it's slowly growing into a little bit of a fandom for me. I love watching these guys play. You take a look at the stats, and Jared Goff is averaging 240 yards a game. It won't shock you. 9 touchdowns to 4 picks. Now, those numbers are fairly Bortles-like, but for a guy that went 0-10 last season as a starter, he's been impressive. I will say that. Furthermore, Todd Gurley, coming off a season in which he averaged 3.2 yards per carry, he played in every game, but he only ran for 885 yards. And he had 327 receiving yards on 43 catches. This season, in seven games, not even half the season, he has 627 yards. He's upped his yards per carry by a full yard. He already has surpassed his longest run from last season. Granted, he already has more fumbles, though. And he's lost more fumbles. He has the most fumbles of any year in his career, with 5. He had 5 in his career coming into this season. So that's something to keep an eye on. But let's stick to the positives. He has 5 touchdowns rushing through 7 games. He had 6 all of last season. And he already has 293 receiving yards on 16 less catches and 3 receiving touchdowns. Came into the year without a receiving touchdown in his career. Todd Gurley has been the engine that's been driving this offense. You look at their receiving core, there are some talented players there. Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, who has been phenomenal, under-the-radar rookie who's having a great year, and Sammy Watkins, who's disappointed in his role. He's come out and been vocal about it. He's got 260 receiving yards, 18 catches through 7 games. He's a better receiver than that. You know, he's 4th on the team in catches. He has less catches than Todd Gurley. Todd Gurley's tied for the lead on the team. He's not a fan of the system. They like to say that winning cures everything, but it appears that Watkins just wants the ball more. I don't know if this is going to present a problem as the season goes on. As of right now, like he's, as I've said, he's made it clear that he's unhappy, but I don't believe it has hurt the team. As I've said, they're 5-2, shocking the world out here. And let's take a look at who they've beaten along the way. They beat up on the Colts sans quarterback. They lost a close one to the Redskins. They won a shootout at San Fran. They beat Dallas in Dallas. They beat Jacksonville in Jacksonville. They barely lost to the Seahawks in LA. And they blew the doors off the Arizona Cardinals. Now they're in a bye week, and next week they fly to the East Coast to take on the New York Giants. The Giants have no receiving core, so this should be a game that the Rams can win. Then they're really going to get tested. They're going to hit a 2-game stretch with 2 phenomenal defenses. They take on the Houston Texans, granted, minus J.J. Watt and Whitney Mercilus. That's a big difference. That's a lot of pass rushing. And then they take on the Minnesota Vikings in Minnesota, a Minnesota team that is overachieved considering the personnel they've had at the quarterback position. We're still waiting for Teddy Bridgewater to come back. And if Teddy comes back and he's Teddy, this Viking team could contend for an NFC title. With Aaron Rodgers injured and the Falcons looking... With Aaron Rodgers injured, the Falcons being very up and down, they're certainly not the team they were last year. The Carolina Panthers being hit or miss every week, and trust me, we'll get into Carolina in a minute. And the NFC East leader being the Philadelphia Eagles, led by an inexperienced Carson Wentz. This could be a fun year for the NFC postseason because it could be wide open. You could argue the same for the AFC. The Chiefs have been great, but Pittsburgh beat them. The Patriots are the Patriots, but their defense is very porous, except against the Falcons. And as I said, we'll get into that later. Got to stop teasing it. I got to stop giving away what's coming up. The Pittsburgh Steelers, who have the personnel to contend, and they've been a good team. Their defense has certainly overachieved this year. I'm not saying by any sense of imagination that they are out of it. They're a good team. But Martavis Bryant is drumming up a little bit of a controversy in that locker room. He's demanded a trade because he feels underutilized. Perhaps he wouldn't have been underutilized if he didn't get himself suspended for a year and he'd be more into the flow of the offense. But that's just my thoughts. Then you have whoever comes out of that AFC South gaggle of good teams, gaggle of decent to good teams. Then you have the wild card teams and the AFC West winner, which we didn't even get into. It's going to be a fun year in the postseason. Back to the matter at hand. The Rams could sneak into the postseason this year. They've already shown that they can hang with the Seahawks. They lost by 6. They play them again. They play the Cardinals, minus Carson Palmer. They play the Saints, which should be a good matchup between 2 high-scoring offenses. They play Philly on December 10th. And that is going to probably be one of the better games of the year. I think Philly is the better team. I think Philly is further along. But let's see if Sean McVay and his boys can keep up and see if they can actually contend this season. Then they have the Titans. Sorry, they have the... In order, in case I've confused you, they have the bye this week. Then they have Giants, Texans, Vikings, Saints, Cardinals, Eagles, Seahawks. Then they're in Tennessee on Christmas Eve. And then on New Year's Eve, they take on the 49ers at home. There are some winnable games in there, but there are also some very competitive ones. especially against the Texans, the Vikings, Philly, Seattle, Tennessee. This is going to be a rough road to the postseason for them. But let's see if they can do it. I'm rooting for the underdog. As we finally move on from my second point in my standout seven, my apologies, but it felt necessary. There's a lot of breakout teams this year. It's a very, very interesting season. Let's get on to an NFL legend, Joe Thomas, one of the best left tackles of all time, one of the best left tackles in the league, if not the best for a majority of his career, coming down with a tricep injury this past week, and ending his streak, which is beyond that of Lou Gehrig, Cal Ripken, 10,363 consecutive snaps played. Consecutive snaps. Never mind that he's played in every game. Consecutive individual snaps. He hadn't missed one in years. This man's a 10-time Pro Bowler, 6-time first-team All-Pro. If you look at the NFL top 100 players, he has been in the top 30 for 5 years. He's been in the top 100 since the inception of the top 100 list. He was on the all-rookie team. He is likely going to be a Hall of Famer, and he has never made the postseason. It is a shame to see Joe Thomas go down, especially because he's such a face of the franchise, and he is such a great personality. If you don't follow him on Twitter, I recommend you do. He's a fun guy, engaging in important debates, such as who gets the armrests in the middle when you're on a plane. It's sad to see him go down. It's sadder that he is yet to be in the postseason. And it's saddest that if he stays in Cleveland, he likely won't. On to some more NFL news. Not that that wasn't, but this is more pertinent. The Carolina Panthers are still the Carolina Panthers. I know, it's shocking. I've talked about it before, and I even mentioned it last week at length, how this team can start cold and they can disappoint. And then they went out and they lost 17-3 to the Chicago Bears in Chicago. The Bears threw the ball 7 times in the entire game. 4 for 7 for Mitchell Trubisky. 107 yards, no touchdowns, no picks. They rushed for 68 yards. I can't explain it. 70 of those passing yards came on one play to Tarik Cohen. Carolina turned the ball over 3 times in this game. Cam Newton had 2 picks, a QBR sub-20, and he had a lost fumble. Eddie Jackson had 2 defensive touchdowns, the only touchdowns in the entire game. It was 17-3 at half, and it ended 17-3. No scoring in the entire second half by this Carolina Panthers offense against the vaunted 85 Bears. I mean, the 2017 rebuilding Chicago Bears. That is sad. Christian McCaffrey had 14 touches for 46 yards, 5 yards a reception, 7 catches, and under 2 yards a carry, 7 carries for 10 yards. The team's leading rusher was Cam Newton, 9 carries for 50 yards. They ran for over 100 yards as a team. Kelvin Benjamin had 3 catches. Curtis Samuel of New York City, shout out to Curtis Samuel, had 1 catch for 20 yards. The team threw for 200 on the day. This was a disgraceful loss. They are much better than this. And the underperformance of teams like Carolina, Atlanta, and Tampa Bay has opened the door to the New Orleans Saints, who enter this week with a half-game lead in the division. You look at the Saints in the preseason, and you look at their roster, you say, yeah, they'll probably be a decent team, but I think they'll be on the outside looking in. Well, we're in week 8, and they're in the driver's seat. Let's see what they could do the rest of the year. Because right now, they're exactly where they want to be. They started 0-2, and you figured, all right, as I said, outside looking in, starting 0-2, I figured, okay, they might be a 5-6 win team. Could be worse. They've won 4 in a row, beat up on the Detroit Lions in highly convincing fashion, and right now, Carolina is just highly disappointing. Our next point, coming off an awful loss to the Baltimore Ravens, demoralizing. I want to look at the quarterback situation in Miami. So you have Tannehill go down before the season even begins. And rather than going with Matt Moore, who, and this might be an unpopular opinion, I know the Dolphins lost last year to Pittsburgh in the postseason. I do not blame Matt Moore one bit. I think he gave it his all, and he played fairly well. The team made a bunch of mental errors, and they were outclassed to begin with. So when you start making mental errors, it sinks in. Drop passes, fumbles, including Matt's fumble. You take a look at the fact that they went with Jay Cutler over Matt Moore, and it makes you wonder. It makes you wonder why. As of right now, it's small, supremely small sample size, of course. Cutler has 180 attempts, Matt Moore has 65. Cutler's averaging less yards per game than Moore. His completion percentage is just over 4% higher, 62.8 to 58.5. 7 touchdowns to 5 picks for Cutler, 2 touchdowns to 3 picks for Moore. Why even go out and sign Jay Cutler? A man that was retired, and I know many kicked this around at the point, and they said, well, he knows the system. And then others would say, well, why didn't you go sign Kaepernick for a dynamic playmaker? If it was about knowing the system, Matt Moore knows the system even better than Cutler. Granted, Cutler may have upside, but this upside largely evaporated years ago. The move looks even more perplexing now that Cutler was injured, and they were forced to play Matt Moore, and Moore looked like you expect him to. But at the same time, Jay Cutler was averaging 150 passing yards a game. Granted, Cutler did make some good throws, some good big throws late in a couple of those games that helped them stay in the game or come back and win. But he is not that much of an improvement to where you'd have to literally convince him to unretire, quit a broadcasting position he was going to have lined up, and come play quarterback for your team. I'm confused. There's no final point to this. I'm not going to lie. It's just perplexing. Next, let's get into the Falcons-Patriots game, which took place last Sunday night. The Falcons went into Foxborough with 28-3 and Super Bowl jokes all around them, and they laid a complete and utter goose egg. Shut out in the first half. Shut out in the first three quarters. It was 20-0. There were murmurs that they might come back, you know, in Patriots fashion. They did not. Matt Ryan threw for 230 yards against a Patriots defense which looked horrendous in previous games. A Patriots team that barely held off the New York Jets. And they go out, they blow them off the field 23-7. Obviously, it's not a 40-point game, but 23-7 is a pretty big victory considering they were up 20 at the end of three. What is going on with these Atlanta Falcons? I mentioned it when we talked about Carolina, but maybe it is the Super Bowl hangover. Maybe it is. Maybe it's still sinking in that they blew what might be their only chance to be king of the world for a year. One thing's for sure. If they want to make the postseason this year, if they want to make it back to the Super Bowl, they're going to have to get their stuff together, and they're going to have to do it fast. Next, we began last week's Standout 7, I believe, with the Aaron Rodgers injury, and we're going to end the Standout 7 this week with an injury to another former Pro Bowl quarterback. Carson Palmer was injured this past week. He suffered a broken arm, and he's supposedly going to be out 8 weeks. He was placed on injured reserve, and this just further damns whatever playoff chances the Arizona Cardinals have. They're a talented squad. They really are, especially on the defensive end. But without Palmer, I don't think they can make it. Especially without Palmer and without David Johnson, the little engine that used to drive this offense. For my money, one of the best, if not the best, all-around backs in the league. Le'Veon Bell is phenomenal. Zeke is great. I'll take David Johnson. And I know they have AP, but this isn't 2012. Adrian Peterson is aging, and he hasn't done this at a high level for an extended period of time in about a year and a half. 2 years. I think the Cardinals are done, and it's a shame. People thought they can contend. I've said it over and over from the outset. I didn't think they were good enough. Without Palmer, they're definitely not. Without Palmer and David Johnson, I think they're dead in the water. All right, folks. Hope you enjoyed this week's Standout 7. And let's get into the picks for Week 8. In Week 7, last week, we tallied a 10-5 record. If you want to be 100, if you want to be completely accurate, we went 10-5 in Week 7, and we already correctly selected this week's Thursday game. So let's try and keep up the momentum and have another solid week, starting with the 9:30 a.m. kick in London, Vikings at Browns. And this will probably be this week's edition of 60-second picks, the greatest long-running segment that wasn't supposed to be a long-running segment in the history of podcasts. Anyway, start your stopwatch. Vikings take on the Browns in London. The Vikings still minus a legitimate quarterback threat, but the Browns are not in much better condition. They're starting DeShone Kizer this week, who's already been benched twice, I believe. Possibly thrice, correct me if I'm wrong. And the Browns are devoid of a lot of offensive talent. Their best player just went down with a triceps injury for the year, Joe Thomas, as we mentioned. And their defense has been decent, but not great. And they're going up against the Minnesota Vikings defense, which has been quite stout. It is one of the best in the league, and I think the rookie throws at least two interceptions, and the Vikings put on a show in England and take this one home pretty easily. On to the first game in America tomorrow. The Chargers, formerly the San Diego Chargers, I wanted to say it. I say it every time. I'm sorry, I should really edit that out, but I gotta let you know, it's an internal strife every time I see it. I still see San Diego. Anyway, Phil Rivers leads the Los Angeles Chargers into Foxborough to take on the New England Patriots. Patriots, as we've mentioned, coming off a victory over the Atlanta Falcons. I think the Pats should be able to take this one home pretty easily. Their offense is really coming together. The chemistry is building. Their defense looked much improved against Atlanta. Obviously, Atlanta's been going through a skid the entire season. They've been very inconsistent. Their offensive numbers have been down. I think that the Chargers, who are coming in with a much less talented offense than the Falcons, are probably going to lose this one by at least 10 points, and the Pats are going to start to assert their dominance over that division once again, and possibly over the AFC. Next, we have the Chicago Bears, fresh off their upset of the Carolina Panthers, taking on another NFC South foe, the New Orleans Saints in New Orleans. I'll give you 60 seconds on this one, too. Trubisky threw for 107 yards last week. To beat the New Orleans Saints in New Orleans, you're going to have to throw for at least 250, or you're going to have a running back who goes off, or possibly some defensive scores. I'll take the Saints in this one, and I'll take the Saints big. Next, we have the first of two great divisional matchups on Sunday. The perplexing Carolina Panthers take on the befuddling Buccaneers in Tampa Bay. Both of these teams have underperformed thus far. I predicted that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers would take a big step forward with Jameis Winston at the helm, with DeSean Jackson coming in, O.J. Howard. O.J. Howard actually got a few catches last week, so good for O.J. They're finally starting to work him in. Cameron Brate has great chemistry with Winston. That's something I didn't take into account. I know the Fox broadcast team was bringing it up. It's hard to work Howard in when Winston has such great rapport with his safety blanket and Brate. Nonetheless, some two tight end schemes would probably benefit them. And anyway, I thought that Buccaneers team would take a leap. They've been supremely disappointing to the point where now I am picking Carolina to beat them in Tampa. I don't want to make this pick. My heart is telling me to go Tampa. My brain is telling me that Cam Newton's going to come out and have a great game. It'll be a battle of the two enormous receivers, Kelvin Benjamin and Mike Evans. Christian McCaffrey will make a couple great plays. He's so shifty, so elusive. He has the potential to be a phenomenal player. And for that reason, I'm going to take Carolina to win this one, probably somewhere in the 20s. It'll be a one-score game. Furthermore, the Bucs have not shored up that kicking situation. I think right now they're rolling with Patrick Murray out of Fordham. Shout out to Patrick. I almost went to Fordham. Nonetheless, I'm not too sure of their kicking situation. They've missed a lot of field goals this season, and that's going to come back to bite them in the long run. And I think in the short run as well, and they're going to lose this game at home. Next, we have the Indianapolis Colts, being led by Jacoby Brissett, taking on the Cincinnati Bengals in Cincy. I'll take Cincy in this one. I think they have much more offensive firepower, especially considering they're running with a quarterback who's fairly experienced. Not like Andy Dalton is an elite passer, but he gets way more flack than he deserves, in my opinion. Andy Dalton is one of those solid second-tier quarterbacks, a la Alex Smith, etc. I think the Bengals win this one fairly easily because they just have too much firepower for that mediocre Colts defense. Then we have an interesting one. The Oakland Raiders, led by Derek Carr, are heading into Buffalo to take on those Bills we talked about earlier. Now, Buffalo's been pretty good at home, and their defense has been phenomenal everywhere. This Oakland offense has struggled in stretches. They were awful. Atrocious. They were atrocious against the Washington Redskins. But they are coming in off 10 days rest and off a victory over the Kansas City Chiefs. So they just might have figured it out. I'm going to take the Raiders to win this one. Because I think eventually the Raiders are going to be able to show the league that they're talented. They're too talented to be a middle-of-the-pack team, and they're going to try and rise to the top of that division. The Chiefs already have the lead, but they've beaten the Chiefs once. If they can get hot and maybe beat the Chiefs one more time, they might be able to sneak in and win this division. Next, we have the Torrey Smith Bowl as the 49ers travel out to Philly to take on the Eagles and Carson Wentz. I think the 49ers, in a rebuilding year, probably don't want to win this game. And that's good, because they're not talented enough, and they won't. Carson Wentz will probably put up another 3-touchdown performance. And as Rich Eisen said, it's going to be time to start talking about Carson Wentz as an MVP contender. I think right now he's already a contender, considering they have one of the best, it might be the best, record in the NFL. And Wentz has been thoroughly impressive and dominant in a majority of those victories. So I'll take Philly by 2 scores at least. The final 1 p.m. kick is from East Rutherford, New Jersey, and it is the Falcons against the New York Jets. Now, if we're talking Captain Literal Man, I'll take a plane over a bird. I'm a big fan of birds, but I'll take a plane over a bird. But in this game, I'll have to take the birds to win. Because the Jets, while they've been competitive in a majority of their games, I don't think they can keep up with this Falcons offense. Now, I've said this for weeks, and the Falcons have underperformed for weeks, but eventually the talent has to win out, no? Now, obviously, they don't have to perform to their highest potential, but I think with Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, Mohamed Sanu, Freeman, and Coleman in the backfield, they just can't lose to the Jets, right? Give me Atlanta, but I'm very weary on this one. Our lone 405 kick this week is one of, if not the best games of the week. It is an interconference matchup between the Houston Texans and the Seattle Seahawks. As I said before, the Seahawks looked vulnerable this year, but at home, they're usually a different beast. But I'm going to take the upset pick here. I don't know if it's really an upset pick, but I would say it is. I'm going to take the Houston Texans with a rookie quarterback to walk in and shock Seattle at home. Deshaun Watson is more than a rookie. He was a seasoned veteran in college, and he's played in large atmospheres, and he's played against rival crowds. I don't know if he's ever seen anything like this, but I think his collegiate career helped to prepare him at least a little bit, and I think a win here might catapult the Texans ahead of that gaggle of teams we mentioned before. Tennessee, who's right there. Jacksonville, who's right there. The Colts are even still in it. I think the Texans show that they're the class of that division by winning this game. Furthermore, I'm not too high on the Seattle Seahawks offense. I love Russell Wilson. He's a phenomenal passer, phenomenal quarterback all in all. Got a good arm, great mobility, and he is smart. But their running game has been lackluster. Their receiving core, minus Jermaine Kearse, is not too scary. And to be honest, and people have said this for years, I'm going to say, I don't know if I've said it on the show already, that Jimmy Graham trade was probably a loss. You gave up a Pro Bowl offensive lineman for a man who was one of the most versatile offensive threats in the league, and he's underperformed, and that's due at least in part to the fact that he's been underutilized. If they can turn that around, then the offense gets significantly better. I don't think they can, because if they could, they would have by now. Give me Houston to pull off the shocker. On to the only 425 kick. Only 2 games in the late afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. The Dallas Cowboys, still with Ezekiel Elliott, notably, head into Washington to take on Kirk Cousins and the Redskins. I'll take Dallas in this one. If we look at it from an offense-defense perspective, the defenses are comparable, in my opinion, and Dallas has much more offensive talent. I said this from the get-go this season. The Redskins do not have enough offensive talent to hang around with the big boys this year. They lost DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon, their 2 leading receivers, and replaced it with only Terrell Pryor. They were hoping that Josh Doctson would step up, and Doctson's a talented player, but to thrust him into that situation and ask for what they're asking for is too much, in my opinion. Furthermore, their running game is not great. I think Dallas wins this one. This one might be closer than it should be, but I think inevitably Dallas pulls away and wins this one by 7 or 10. I said last week Dak Prescott would put on a show. He had a pretty good game. I think this week the star of the show might be Ezekiel Elliott. Jason Witten will probably find the end zone again just because he's Jason Witten. the infuriating tight end that he is. And I think Dallas begins to show that while they might not be able to catch Philly, they are certainly a playoff-quality team in the NFC. The Sunday night game of the week is at Ford Field in Detroit, where the Lions will welcome Ben Roethlisberger and the Killer Bees of the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think Pittsburgh wins this one. I'm not going to lie, I'm on the fence about it. I really want to pick Detroit to pull off the semi-upset at home, because Pittsburgh has been underwhelming at parts, but their defense has blown me away, to be honest. Now, granted, Pittsburgh is not 7-0 through seven games, but their defense has overperformed. I was expecting their defense to be mediocre and for them to be carried by a high-powered offense. They went into Kansas City and won a close game, and they earned my respect for that game. I think they can go into Detroit and beat a lesser opponent in the Detroit Lions. I think this one is not a 19-12 kind of game, or 19-13, rather, whatever the score was. I think this game is more high 20s, low 30s, because I think the Detroit Lions like to air it out a little bit more than the Chiefs do, and I think Pittsburgh will do the same. But inevitably, Mike Tomlin and his boys will probably walk away from this one with some momentum and a victory. On Monday night, we have another divisional matchup. Excuse me, I overlooked it before. I said the first of two good ones. This is the third one. The Denver Broncos, led by Trevor Siemian and an underperforming, as of late, Denver offense, head into Arrowhead to take on the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, part of me wants to pick the upset. I want to pick the Denver Broncos and Trevor Siemian to right the ship, but I don't think they can right the ship against this Kansas City team. Kansas City is frustrated. They're coming off a loss to the Oakland Raiders by 1 point, in which the Raiders ran what seemed to be 10 plays at the 1 yard line before they were able to score the go-ahead touchdown in the final seconds. Excuse me, not even the final seconds. They scored twice in the final seconds that were waved off, and then they scored on the final play of the game, which was with triple zeros on the clock because of a defensive penalty. Either way, I think Kansas City comes in off 10 days rest and wins this one fairly convincingly. Denver's offense continues to struggle. Kansas City puts their foot down and just says no to this Denver team. Finally, folks, as is customary, we will pick the Thursday night game of Week 9 next week. The Buffalo Bills head into New Jersey to take on the Jets at 8:25 this week. And while the Jets have been competitive in a lot of games, they haven't been able to win them. The Jets have already lost once to the Bills this season. Granted, that was in Buffalo, and that was the beginning of the year. I think they'll make it an even two, and I think the Jets begin to slide down to where their fans would like them to be and where the organization would want to be. They're going to begin to slide down towards the bottom of the standings and try and get that high draft pick. And I think the Bills stay in the fray, hold the Jets to very few points, and win this game fairly convincingly. That'll bring us to the conclusion of this week's pick'em portion of the show, and that'll bring us to the conclusion of this week's show. Thank you for joining us, each and every one of you. Enjoy what will hopefully be another great weekend of NFL football, and this is Nicholas Donatic, signing off.